dedicated to all my people that was caught up in Hurricane Katrina. Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama. We riding with y'all. You know what I'm saying? I feel your pain. We gon' make it through this, y'all. Yeah. Come on.
Welcome to Voices from the Frontline segment of the 4 o'clock Public Affairs Hour on KPFK Radio, 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, and streaming on the web for the world at www.kpfk.org. My name is Tammy Bang-Lu, and I'm your host today for the show. We're going to spend the hour on Gulf Coast reconstruction, 2 years post-Hurricanes Katrina and Rita. At the top of the hour, we'll have Chris Crome, Executive Director of the Institute for Southern Studies, on their recent publication, Blueprint for Global Gulf Renewal, The Katrina Crisis and the Community Agenda for Action. Then we're going to have Ajamu Baraka, Executive Director of Human Rights Network, on the ongoing struggle for the right of return. Michael Leon Guerrero from Grassroots Global Justice Alliance will be talking about the National Movement Solidarity Delegation to the Gulf Coast. And we'll close with Kali Akuno, Executive Director of People's Hurricane Relief Fund and Oversight Coalition, on the situation on the ground and preparations for the International Tribunal. Stay tuned with Chris Crome up next.
Goddamn sheriffs is laughing again. It all stink, keep your ass out the wind. See the black in the brown, we can share the same land. When I was a slave, where the hell did I ran?
Well, we'd like to welcome Chris Crome to the show. Chris, again, is the Executive Director of the Institute for Southern Studies and the publisher of the award-winning magazine Southern Exposure, which recently published a report entitled Blueprint for Gulf Renewal, The Katrina Crisis, and a Community Agenda for Action. Welcome, Chris.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So let's just start off. I mean, your report says that you interviewed over 40 community leaders and scoured through government reports and statistics. At the top of the thing is Bush has claimed that he spent, the administration spent $116 billion on Gulf Coast since 2005. And your report saying there's a difference between that those that are responding to the emergency and the amount of money for rebuilding post a disaster, and then again, the amount of money people have actually received. So explain all that.
Yeah, well, the reason we did all that, all number crunching, is that, you know, whenever you, if you look, go to the Gulf Coast today, it's, I would say that the, and I think all the people that we interviewed, said that the recovery after Katrina has pretty much been a failure. I mean, when you see 60,000 people still in FEMA trailers, you see schools and hospitals and houses shuttered, when you see no attempt to try to fix up the wetlands and to preserve the environment, when you see all these threats that are keeping thousands of people from coming back to the Gulf Coast and having their right of return, you know that the recovery has been a failure. But whenever you talk to people in Washington about that, their first response is, oh, but we've written a big check to make sure that the Gulf Coast recovery happens, $116 billion, $114 billion. That kind of changes around, but a big sum of money. Well, so we really wanted to look under the hood and see how much money had really gone out the door. And what we were really surprised to find, and really not surprised in a way, given the situation on the ground, but given all the claims of how much money had been spent, what we were really, what we thought was really important to let people know was the fact that, first of all, only 30% of that money has to do with the things that we think of as recovery, like fixing up the schools and the hospitals and getting it to people's homes. Most of that was just money that was blown in the first few months of the disaster to FEMA, which really didn't serve a lot of people, as you'll find out when you interview people in the Gulf Coast, too. So we're left with a really small amount of money that's really left for rebuilding the Gulf Coast. And then on top of that, the fact is that only half of that 30% has even been spent, much less gotten to the people who need it the most.
Hmm. And why is that the case? What would you say were the top two or three reasons that the money hasn't been given to actually rebuild the schools or emergency housing or low-income housing?
Number one, this goes back to Washington. It's that Washington does not have a commitment, is not made a priority to make sure that this money, which is their money, get to those most in need. Now, you'll find a lot of finger-pointing if you go down the chain about money that was given to state and local governments, to contractors. But the bottom line is that this is federal money, and a lot of it's federal programs. You know, for example, HUD, Housing and Urban Development, they're the ones who are in charge of the 5,000 units of public housing that they want to demolish in New Orleans, even though people want to come back home. You go to the levees in New Orleans, which still haven't been rebuilt. In our report, we give these maps of which neighborhoods are safer now, 2 years after the storm. Almost none of the neighborhoods are safer now with levees being repaired, except for one, the Lakeview neighborhood, which happens to be one of the whitest neighborhoods in New Orleans. And you just go on down the line. These issues go straight back to Washington. And I think that's the real driving message of our report, is that Katrina is a national issue and that there is federal accountability about what's happening, the ongoing crisis in the Gulf Coast.
So let's get into some of the recommendations in terms of what should the money be spent on. Now, we know that the money hasn't been spent, and most of it inside FEMA, but the first issue in terms of your key recommendation is to launch a kind of a bold six-month agenda for the recovery. So there's no overarching plan.
Yeah, right now, you know, what we like to call it is a trickle-down recovery. You know, the idea is that you just give out money, you give tax breaks to a few corporations. They have these go zones, which are basically you just give some tax breaks to a company and maybe they'll create some jobs. One of our findings in our report is, you know, go zones have been a complete failure. They've been about $3.5 billion in tax breaks. The latest one was a $1 million luxury condos that they want to build near the University of Alabama, which is 4 hours from the Gulf Coast. And so, you know, that's just an example of a trickle-down recovery. So what we're calling for, you know, as Malcolm Suber of the People's Hurricane Relief Fund said in our report, you know, only one entity has the money and the resources to really rebuild the Gulf Coast, and that's the federal government. And so what we're calling for in that first recommendation, there is no strategy to make sure that this money gets to those who need it. And, you know, who knows if you really have confidence that they're going to do that. But what we're calling on them is, look, there's billions and billions of dollars you're saying are being spent. Let's make sure it gets to those who need it the most.
So this is at a time where we've had the presidential candidates all running down to the Gulf Coast. So Barack Obama's down there, Hillary Clinton's headed down there. I mean, one of the things that your report, rightly so, it's putting a lot of pressure on the Bush administration. And in different parts of the report, it talks about the House recovery bill. Like, there's a House bill that has yet to be passed. And there's mention of Nancy Pelosi saying that there's a commitment. But now we're talking about, one, the Democrats are in power, mm-hmm. or at least holding Senate and the House. Mm-hmm. Why hasn't a bill been passed? And second, you know, we're going to hear a lot of talk and a lot of lip service from the presidential candidates on what they claim to do in Katrina. So we're looking at not just the Bush administration, but the Dems falling short.
Oh, exactly. I mean, this has been a bipartisan strategy, whether you call it neglect or whether you call it intentional denial of helping the people in the Gulf Coast. I mean, look, when we were down there at the six-month point, 6 months after Katrina hit, we were down there for one of our 8 fact-finding trips that we've done for the Institute for Southern Studies, and Nancy Pelosi came into town, and she started out her speech by saying, oh my goodness, I'm so shocked at what's happening here in the Gulf Coast, I never knew. Well, that really kind of showed, you know, she hadn't made an effort to get down there until 6 months after the storm, and that really kind of showed where the Democrats were at too. They did a lot of political grandstanding in Washington, but nobody was really taking the lead, except for some of the Gulf Coast representatives who were on their own, to really try to get some money down to the people who needed it in the Gulf Coast. And the people and those representatives had their own problems, right? And so, yeah, this is really a case of, this isn't a Democratic or Republican issue. This is the failure of Washington to show that it's going to live up to its responsibility and its commitment to rebuild and make the people whole in the Gulf Coast.
So then let's take a look at one of the other recommendations. The second one is bringing people home. I mean, we're going to have Ajamu Barakas later in the show to talk about the right of return using UN standards of internally displaced people. But you've got some really startling statistics around just the level of three areas. I mean, home ownership and what hasn't been going back to help people rebuild. But then also help for renters. I mean, what a lot of people, I think your report is showing, is some areas of 70% to 200% increase in rent prices. And then the third is the situation around public housing.
That really is the fundamental barrier that's keeping people from coming back. And there's a whole range of things. You know, if you're a family, you look at schools, you look at the lack of childcare, you look at lack of hospitals. But first and foremost is trying to get back into a house. And just no matter whether you're a homeowner, and it's important to remember that about half of the people, for example, in the Ninth Ward, they'd really turned that around in the 80s. They'd been making some real progress around black homeownership, and more and more people were owning houses, modest as they were. And that's why it was so devastating when the programs were set up to help homeowners were so ineffective. You know, as of 18 months out from the storm, this spring, we documented that they only had sent out 630 checks out of over 100,000 people that applied to get some help as homeowners. In Louisiana, they had only just over 600 people had even gotten some money. And you can see how it's kind of a waiting game, right? I mean, people are dispersed all over the country, Houston, Atlanta, wherever they ended up, and they're struggling to make ends meet. They're struggling to get back home. And the government just kind of plays this waiting game to see how long they can last before they break and decide they just can't do it. Same with renters. Initially, there was no money whatsoever to help out the half of the Katrina victims who were renters, and that presented severe problems for people. Eventually, that's what this housing bill that passed the House this year did include some money for that, but it hasn't passed the Senate or the President's desk yet, so we really don't know what's going to happen there. And the same goes for public housing, and this is one of the most egregious. You know, there are some 5,000 units of public housing that were barely damaged by the storms, and yet they HUD, and this is a federal agency, right, decided that they wanted to raise that housing, and they spent some $13 million to encase them in metal so that people couldn't get back into them, and that's been a major terrain of a political struggle. But as you can see, just on down the line, just getting people into affordable housing has just been a tooth-and-nail struggle, and that doesn't even count all the things that come once you get back into that house, whether you can find a school, whether your neighborhood's going to be safe because they've cleaned up the toxics. It's just on down the line, there has not been that federal commitment to deal with the issues that will get people back into New Orleans and the Gulf Coast.
Hmm. Well, I mean, I know we're taking a lot of hits because this report really looks at a broad range of just issues that are affecting people in the Gulf Coast. I mean, one of the things is housing. In the whole issue, what we're seeing is not only is it just poor people, but specifically this is a racial issue because it's the amount of black people that have been displaced and that are still not without housing. And I think one of the most egregious pieces of the report is just the amount of money that's been dedicated to rebuilding the levees. And then you guys document the very few money that's been given to help rebuild is actually in a predominantly white upper middle class community.
That's right. And that really has gone for a lot of the aspects of the recovery. You know, there's all these programs, and again, you know, just how little money has actually gone out the door. You know, out of the $8-some billion the Army Corps of Engineers has been given, they've spent less than 20% of that. And they're saying they're not going to finish rebuilding these levees until 2011. And I'll give you another example. You know, one of the interesting things, talking to the community leaders down there, was their belief that coastal protection, protecting the wetlands, how that's an environmental justice issue and how that uniquely affects people of color. We talked to people in the Holy Cross neighborhood in the lower Ninth Ward, adamant about how we needed to protect the wetlands because that was their buffer against mm-hmm. storms hitting their neighborhood. Same with the Homa Nation, home of 16,000 indigenous people FEMA wouldn't even go into their neighborhood. We interviewed the leader, the chief of that nation, and she said, FEMA gave us nothing. Zero. 16,000 people left on their own who are right on the buffer, right on the coast. And she said if they let the energy interests and other people eat away at the coast, 40% of wetland destruction and coastal destruction is from the energy companies, their oil and gas pipelines. If they keep doing that, our community is going to disappear within a decade or within a generation. So they are clear. And Bush just threatened to veto any water bill that would have coastal restoration as part of it. That is an environmental justice issue that's uniquely going to impact indigenous, people of color, African-American communities on the Gulf Coast.
One of the other pieces in terms of your recommendation is looking at trying to rebuild jobs.
Yes.
One of the things you're saying is launch a Gulf Coast Civic Works program similar to the one after the Great Depression. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, well, this is an idea that I feel like is really gaining some steam. Scott Myers-Lipton is a professor in Southern California. We have James Rucker at Color of Change in the Bay Area. They've been really pushing this, and other people, Acorn in New Orleans. Really this idea that, I mean, look, you know, and here we are 2 years out of Katrina. We're still struggling to find good-paying jobs in the Gulf Coast. And here in the Great Depression, the Works Progress Administration, in 2 months, created 4 million jobs that put people to work fixing up schools and hospitals. They planted 3 billion trees during the Works Progress Administration. I mean, it's pretty amazing. And so you think about that, how many people, and we estimate that for under $4 billion, which is less than half of what we pay for the Iraq War every month, we could employ 100,000 people at $15 an hour, which is good pay in the Gulf Coast, with good jobs, get them back up on their feet, to rebuild their own communities. And it would be a win-win for everybody. People would have money, stimulate the economy. but it goes totally against the grain of the current philosophy, which is the trickle-down recovery of just giving money to the corporations and maybe they'll end up hiring somebody. This anti-government privatization approach is just not considered possible. But what's encouraging is that you do see people like John Edwards and Barack Obama have recently come out with kind of limited versions of supporting some version of this Gulf Civic Works program idea. And I really feel like this could be a rallying point. You know, this really is, it's reinventing our idea about, you know, maybe there's something that government can do. Maybe privatization is the only way to go.
Well, that's also because in the 1920s and 30s, there was a very strong socialist movement and a populist movement, and it forced those in power at the moment to have to adopt the demands in terms of being able to meet people in the center.
Exactly.
So I think that's still another thing, that having a stronger social movement on the ground could actually put some pressure.
Yeah, and I'll just, that's exactly true. It came out of the labor movement. It came out of the popular struggles of that time. And that's what we need today around Katrina. You know, one thing I was just talking with an activist, and we're saying, where's the rage, you know, nationally around Katrina? This is everybody's issue about what's happening to tens of thousands of people, but also because it's a real warning sign about what could happen to anyone across the country, given our current political dynamics. So we're really saying, especially on this two-year anniversary, look at what's happening in the South and the Gulf Coast, and we need a national movement of people who are going to demand justice for the tens of thousands of people there, but it's a broader movement for justice, too.
That's right. You know, one of the interviews, you have Sackett Sony from the New Orleans Worker Center for Racial Justice,
mm-hmm.
and he's talking about, in terms of looking at jobs, it's a dual fight. It's, on the one instance, looking at trying to address the systematic exclusion of African-American workers, so folks that live in the New Orleans, at the same time about addressing systematic exploitation of the immigrants that they've brought in to do the work. Can you talk a little bit about that interview?
Yeah, that was a really powerful interview, and I encourage everyone who's interested in this issue to check out that piece of the report, which you can find at the southernstudies.org website. But what he really talks about, and this is one of the leading groups that's organizing new immigrant workers in the Gulf Coast after Katrina, what you saw happen right after Katrina struck is this dual labor market kind of crater, this dual phenomenon happened where the workers who were there before were systematically excluded, and they were locked out of that process, of the rebuilding process, and weren't given a lot of those rebuilding jobs. At the same time, you had the new immigrant workforce that was locked into these incredibly exploitive and abusive situations, which a lot of it was through the guest worker program, which is kind of the national model for what both parties want to do with immigration. And the situation where immigrant workers, whether from South Asia or from Honduras or from South America, paying $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 to a recruiter to bring them to the United States, and then they're pretty much tied to one employer, so that employer doesn't give them protective equipment on the job, mistreats them, exploits them, doesn't pay them. They're still locked to that one employer and can be kicked out if they try to speak up. So it was this dual system that didn't benefit either one, and it was something that the Bush administration encouraged through its federal policy of encouraging that kind of work to be done, ignoring affirmative action requirements after the storm, dismantling the prevailing wage provisions, and some of that got built in over time thanks to popular pressure. But they created this situation that was to pit these workers against each other, and you see the result now where people are still struggling to find good work, and many can't.
Well, then let's look at the other issue that you explore, is the issue with the schools.
Mm-hmm.
How much money has been given to, I know we've seen a lot of the unions were fighting because thousands of teachers were losing their jobs, and very little schools have been rebuilt, and a real push towards the charter school system.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about those interviews?
Yeah, well, that was a real interesting discussion because, frankly, a lot of people are just so at wit's end about the schools because so few of them are open that you found people kind of saying, well, you know, maybe we'll think the charter school system is okay just because they're so frustrated that nothing was getting off the ground. But that exactly is what happened. Is immediately after the storms, the Bush administration made a very deliberate intervention. Again, this is more evidence that this really does go back to Washington, where they gave millions of dollars to the charter school to get up and running. That immediately meant that 7,500 union employees, union teachers, were fired from the public school system. Many of them dispersed to never come back. And that was kind of, in a way, a black professional middle class that was an anchor in some of these communities. And so that's been dispersed, and so slowly they're trying to rebuild some mix. And there's like three competing school systems. It's very complex, but the bottom line is that the charter schools are kind of the lead, and then you also have some public schools being rebuilt. The question is whether either of them are going to be built fast enough to accommodate people. But also with the charter schools, like you find elsewhere across the country, the real question is what's the accountability, especially after Katrina, what you saw with a lot of students who had special needs. Maybe they had special needs before Katrina, maybe definitely after Katrina they had special needs, having gone through so much trauma and horrible situations, that a lot of those charter schools, it seemed that they weren't taking students, they were kind of creaming, they were taking the better students, and not having any programs to deal with mental health or other concerns that kind of additional needs that a student might have. So that's a real issue. And there's a new person who's running the recovery school district, this Paul Vallis, and he actually had some interesting ideas, so it'll be interesting to see what happens. But the bottom line is none of the schools are getting enough resources, and this charter school experiment could be very dangerous. You know, one thing Vallis was talking about is having corporations like Lockheed start to buy schools and be the sponsor for schools. And, you know, when you have a major defense contractor being running a school, I think that raises some serious questions.
Well, let's close with the last. I mean, this is really impressive in terms of the numbers, and you have a lot of key stories from on-the-ground organizers. You know, in trying to compile something like this, I mean, can you just name like one or two of the stories that when you interviewed really just touched you on the need in terms of, you know, where is the rage and something that people could hear that maybe not come through in terms
right.
of the report?
Right. Well, I'll tell you two stories. One of the more interesting was talking in Biloxi to some of the leaders there. And so you had people like Sharon Hanshaw, who used to be a beautician, had a beauty shop, and just kind of became thrust into running an organization called Coastal Women for Change and has become a dynamic community leader in Biloxi, Mississippi. Tao Vu is another one with Boat People SOS. They've joined with a coalition called the STEPS Coalition across coastal Mississippi. And I guess that's one of the driving things we want to draw on this report. It's just this amazing, vibrant movement that's taken place against all odds, in spite of, not because of, the assistance they've gotten from the government. And they've been able to eke out and win some real victories. But it's been extremely difficult, but it's a real inspiration, I think, nationally. And one thing we really try to draw out in this report, and why we call it Blueprint for Gulf Renewal, focusing on the positive, is that these grassroots leaders have just tons of great, innovative ideas about what needs to be done, and they have a very clear message to the nation about what needs to be done. And so I really encourage people to read the report and learn from the wisdom of these grassroots leaders that things really can change if we have the political will.
Well, thank you so much, Chris Chrome. Again, this is Blueprint for Gulf Renewal, the Katrina Crisis and the Community Agenda for Action. Give us the website where people can find the report.
Sure thing. It's southernstudies.org, and then put a slash in there and type in Gulf Watch. So southernstudies.org/Gulf Watch.
Again, www.southernstudies.org, and then if you want to hit the report, www.southernstudies.org/Gulf Watch. Well, thank you so much. That's Chris Chrome with the Institute for Southern Studies. We'll be right back with Ajamu Baraka from the U.S. Human Rights Network on the ongoing struggle for the right of return.